Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's Brian Lehrer, and this is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, July 17th. So in New York City and lots of other places, school may open in September with a hybrid model of some days in person and some days at school, right? Some days at home. The Mayor de Blasio plan for the city is literally 50-50, 2 or 3 days a week at home, 2 or 3 days a week in person, because that's what he says it will take to have the classroom space for social distancing. The hybrid model may be the best way to go, or it may not be, but even if it is, one big result of the hybrid model will be an instant childcare crisis for parents who also work in the paid economy. Day-by-day childcare, different days on different weeks, different times of day for your two different kids or more than two different kids, different days for your two or more kids. Today and tomorrow, we will begin the show both days with the back-to-school plans conversation that I know is the obsession of every parent right now. We will get the teachers' union point of view tomorrow with UFT President Michael Mulgrew, right at this time, top of the show tomorrow. But right now, it's parents and childcare. We will open the phones in a minute for your stories, concerns, questions for our guests. Let me introduce them. New York City Council member Brad Lander of Brooklyn, who has a three-part proposal for the city government to help parents in those scenarios. And Bridget Schulte, director of the Better Life Lab at the New America think tank and author of Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. Thanks to both of you for coming on. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
Good morning.
Great to be here.
Brad Lander, let's just dive in. What are you proposing?
Super. Thanks for having me on. And Bridget, good to be on with you. And boy, Overwhelmed is sure apropos right now. So, you know, I think, Brian, you framed it out really well. For those parents who are working, for healthcare workers and folks in grocery stores and sanitation workers and teachers themselves, how could they possibly function if their kids are only in school half the time and the other half the time they're supposed to be at home doing remote learning with them? No teacher could go to school full time while their elementary school age kid they were supposed to be home with. So we have to commit to provide wraparound childcare and enrichment activities for the time that public school kids can't be in the classroom. And I agree, we have to dramatically reduce the numbers in the classroom, but there's lots of other spaces in all our neighborhoods, libraries and community centers and YMCAs and closed offices and many, many other spaces, and a lot of great not-for-profit and childcare organizations that can be providing good, safe, enriching childcare. And we've got to immediately work to stand up the system so that it's available this fall.
So, for example, one of your three main planks is provide wraparound childcare and enrichment activities for the time kids aren't in the classroom for all families who need it. What does that mean the ground? Is that city-run daycare centers? What's the infrastructure here, and can you get it by Labor Day?
That's right. I mean, and look, this is like a Marshall Plan style piece of work. And part of the problem is the city doesn't have anybody whose job is to run point on childcare. There's some great subsidized childcare programs and pre-K and 3K, but most people's childcare hasn't historically related to the city at all. So we need, we appointed a food czar, we created the new test and trace score. We need a dedicated leader or team. And then that person or team has to immediately issue a big request for proposals to contract for the space that's needed. And there's so many opportunities, houses of worship, after-school organizations, Y's, theaters, offices. So we're going to have to contract for the space. Then we're going to have to contract for the programming and operations with not-for-profit community groups, after-school providers, summer camp providers. There's plenty of folks available, a lot of whom are not working right now. So they won't be licensed public school teachers, but they'll be people, you know, where there's been background checks and they're working for organizations with a lot of experience in youth and child development. to run it. And it's a big order. We think, you know, it's something over 100,000, maybe 150,000 kids every day, elementary school age, some middle school aged, who won't be in the classroom, but whose working parents have to have childcare if they're going to be able to do their job. So it's a big task. So far, the city is not, you know, hasn't issued that RFP, hasn't appointed that leader. And the clock is ticking. If we're going to be ready this fall, we got to start right now.
And Bridget, we'll bring you in a minute for big picture context on all of this. But I also want you to hear Brad Lander's specific proposals and give us your take on whether you think even he is getting at some of the gender inequities here. But so one more, Councilman, you propose that the city mandate that employers provide accommodations for working parents. So you're talking about city-run daycare facilities on the one hand, that's what you were just doing. What would you have the city require of employers, and how would they provide it on the ground?
Yeah. So if in those cases where people are going to be limited in their childcare hours to what the school is providing, then the city needs to make sure that their employers have to accommodate the hours that they can work. Now, that doesn't mean, unfortunately, you would get paid a full-time salary for half-time work. That's why the childcare is needed. But it would at least mean they can't fire you and replace you with someone who doesn't have kids and bring them in to do your job, that they have to make an accommodation for your working. And that might sound crazy, but we've done it before, actually. Just in 2017, the city council passed a law requiring fair scheduling for fast food and retail workers. Before, they had totally erratic schedules, couldn't get full-time hours, didn't get notice of their schedules in advance. And we passed a law that provides all those things. We can do the same thing here. It's just a law that says employers must accommodate workers to the hours that they've got childcare based on schooling hours and give them schedules that match the work schedules. That won't solve every problem. It doesn't, you know, enable folks to earn enough money. Really eager to hear from Bridget, because I think we all know just how much the burden of all these problems, unfortunately, falls on working moms. But at least it makes sure you can keep your job. They have to give you a schedule that accommodates to it, and that you can, you know, move forward through this crisis knowing that you don't have to choose between having kids and having a job, which is how it feels for so many people right now.
And listeners, if you're just joining us, that was Brooklyn City Council member Brad Lander. Also with us, Bridget Schulte, director of the Better Life Lab at New America and author of Overwhelmed: Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. And so, Bridget Schulte, you've written and spoken about the pandemic in general, making many of the usual gender inequalities grotesquely worse. Want to lay out what you're seeing?
Well, absolutely. I think it's important to start to really understand that childcare is a huge necessity for the majority of working families. Every day, there are about 12 million children under the age of five whose parents are in the workforce and need a safe place to go. Right now, with the pandemic, you know, I think it's important to remember that before the pandemic, this was a really broken system. You know, parents are paying up to 30% of their income in trying to find childcare. Affordable childcare is defined at about 7% of your income. So providers were operating on razor-thin margins, and childcare workers were earning poverty wages. About half, you know, qualify for public assistance. They make such little money. So the system was already broken. And then you add the pandemic, the economic turndown, now this racial justice reckoning on top of it. You've got a system that is virtually on fire. What has been shocking to me as we talk about reopening, that really there has been no discussion, no meaningful discussion at the highest levels about how critical it is to have childcare before you can reopen, before you can even talk about return to work or economic, you know, getting back to some kind of economic growth. That is completely predicated on having on working parents having the ability to have their children in a safe environment where they can learn and grow. You know, right now it is absolutely impossible, untenable and unsustainable. And so one thing that Brad said that I think that we all need to begin thinking about is a Marshall Plan. That this is a system that has been, again, not only broken, but really neglected. This has been seen as sort of women's work or kind of undervalued. We don't really think about it. In the United States, we tend to think that family is a private matter. So if you're going to work, well, then you figure it out. And, you know, many other peer economies do not think of it this way. They think of early care and learning as a public good, something that we really need to come together to invest in. And I think that the pandemic is showing that our approach has been completely wrongheaded, and we really need to think much bigger about how to create a much better infrastructure in the care economy to begin with. We need to create decent and dignified work for the workers. We need to ensure that parents are not paying up to 30% of their income just to try to get their children someplace safe so that they can go to work. And we also need to think, I think, on the flip side, and Brad makes this a very important point, we need to think about workplace change, not even thinking about this as an accommodation, but that this is sort of normal, that we have, you know, a third of the workforce has children, you know, under the age of 18 who need childcare or school or places to go in order to be able to work. That this is central to the functioning of our economy, and this is something that we all need to be caring about and figuring out how to invest and how to reshape and redesign our workplaces so that we understand that having caregiving responsibilities is not an outlier to be accommodated, but just simply the way things are, that we need to figure out how to work with, how to accommodate flexible schedules, how to not stigmatize the fact that somebody has a caregiving responsibility.
Bridget, I'm curious if you, in the context of everything you just said, have a preferred method of pandemic-era school in that context. Like, L.A. says they're going to start the semester fully remote. Miami-Dade, despite their spike, is going to try to start the semester fully in school. New York has announced this hybrid model. It's all subject to change everywhere, I think, depending on what happens with the pandemic itself in the next few weeks. But through the lens that you are viewing things through, do you have a preferred model?
It's so hard to say right now. I think, again, we have to go back to how we as a nation have been handling this pandemic. And if we had far more testing from the start, we would have a much better sense of where the clusters are and how infection spreads. We would have a much better sense of who needs to be quarantined, where it's safe to come back. We are nowhere near the levels of testing where we need to be in order to make those kinds of decisions. And so you're right, we're at a situation now where school districts are all over the map, and parents are really the ones that are really in a really untenable and impossible situation now. You know, the schools change their ideas every week, and then you have to decide by next week, are you going to sign up for the remote model? Are you going to, have your child come into school for 2 days a week? And let me tell you, it is not surprising that recent surveys show that parents are under enormous stress right now. I don't think we know what the right answer is, and largely because of our unfortunate way that we have responded to the pandemic. So part of any response is what we should have been doing months ago, which is leaning into much more testing, much more understanding of spread and infection, much more data sharing and transparency, and frankly, much more access to the protective gear, the cleaning supplies, and frankly, the help that schools need. We're talking about reopening schools, and there is no conversation about just how expensive that's going to be in order to do it safely and how mm-hmm. much more public support needs to happen before we can even talk about doing even a hybrid model safely.
Yeah, I just want to say, I think thinking about what's age appropriate is really important here as well. For younger kids who are 4, 5, 6, 7, that remote learning is not meaningful for kids at those ages. and B, they're the most likely where parents need the child care. So if we can do things to get those kids in safe classrooms every day, you know, whether those are in schools or in the kind of wraparound I'm proposing, that makes a lot of sense. For older kids in high school, remote is more possible. The child care need is less acute. But so far, we haven't seen much thinking about what's age appropriate and how that needs to be reflected in the reopening plan.
Absolutely. Age appropriate. My son was doing remote learning last semester, but in college, so it becomes a lot easier.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, I'm really glad he's not 7 years old right now. Maria in Sunset Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Maria.
Yes, good morning. I'm listening to all of this, and I fortunately have a grown child, so I am not directly affected, but it is beneath comprehension that it doesn't appear that these essential workers that we have touted so highly, whether they're in the food industry, whether in the healthcare industries, not everybody is a doctor. Not everybody is even a high-paid nurse. We have thousands of people. We have a major hospital neighborhood that hires locally. That are these voices of these essential workers being invited to speak to these issues before policy is made? It certainly doesn't seem so. And so when you walk around the neighborhood, you see that the majority of this work is being done by women. Where are the children going to be hidden? Because the bills have to be paid. Many of our neighbors are not eligible for any assistance from government. Yet they feed us, they clean our homes, they take care of our elders. So this goes beyond education. This goes beyond all the essential work of a society, of the economy, of the neighborhood, of the city, and beyond. So on the other side of this, now we have a growing number of what lovingly we have called hot sheets hotels in the neighborhood, hotels that appear out of nowhere after of the overbuilding of downtown Brooklyn, because we were supposed to have rooms for all the people who went to Barclays games so that they wouldn't go home drunk on the and drive back to Long Island or New Jersey or wherever they came from. But that's, of course, we knew that that was not what was going to happen. We, in turn, became the neighborhood that housed prostitution and human trafficking, and there are lawsuits that took place. This is not, gossip in the neighborhood. The district attorney, the Kings County district attorney, fought still. Dealing with some of these
Maria, let me
these buildings are sitting there empty right now, and some of them are for sale.
And so, are you proposing to use them for classrooms? So a higher percentage of kids could be going to school a higher percentage of the
correct.
Time.
Correct, and childcare as well.
Yes,
and I'm sorry, I apologize for not grasping the name of the speaker, not Brad Lander, the woman.
Bridget Schulte.
Right. I know. They both make very valid points. She really digs into that family dynamic, which I think, and Brad on the age appropriateness of this issue. But there's also, I haven't heard, and maybe it's just because I haven't heard it, that nobody's speaking to all those students. Let's take CUNY. Let's stick with CUNY, that have excellent early childhood curriculum and programs. Brooklyn College, New York City Tech, Hunter. You take them at whatever level, and these young people are not need to earn money. They are being educated in this, in the care of children, in the education of children.
I understand. And Maria, I'm going to have to leave it there for time, but you raised so many crucial, central points. Please keep calling us. Brad Lander, and I think her neighborhood, Sunset Park, is in your district, or part of it is in your district. But
very close.
What about the very practical solution that she proposed to some of this, all those hotel rooms now not being used around the Barclays Center, and for that matter, what you proposed earlier in the program about setting up so many city-funded facilities for childcare so the parents can work during the hybrid school model? What if they were to be used by the Department of Education and so many more kids could just go to school? So on both of those things.
Yeah. Yeah, Maria speaks very eloquently about what the pandemic is showing us about how we aren't living up to the things that we say we value. And I think she's so right about that. And we haven't done enough listening to those. You know, we might cheer at 7 p.m., but we have not done enough listening to the needs of essential workers. I think her ideas are really good ones. There are lots of different kinds of spaces that we should be using better. Hotels, I think, might make more sense for dealing with the problem we're having of expanding homelessness right now and some other kinds of health and mental health care because the rooms aren't necessarily big enough to be classroom size. But I think we should be creative to do everything we can. We've got closed offices. We've got closed movie theaters. We've got closed cultural organizations. And we need this full-scale mobilization that uses all those resources and does it quickly. I love the idea of those CUNY students who are learning early childhood education and who themselves are having learning that's remote, being, you know, a big part of the folks who are providing the education. On the issue of having the DOE do it, which we should as much as we possibly can, the challenge of surging enough teachers to be available by the fall, I think, is even more challenging than getting enough spaces. The spaces are there in all of our neighborhoods. They're empty right now. We can contract for them and put them in place. We've got all these folks who are out of work, many of whom who have some skills and experience in working with kids. We're going to need a lot of teachers in the fall, and DOE is working that into their plans because doing remote learning as well as in-classroom learning already is requiring the hiring a lot of teachers. And I don't think it's realistic that we could have certified teachers in twice as many classrooms this fall, even if we have the classrooms available. And that's why we need to use these creative approaches of nonprofit organizations and many others.
All right. City Council Member Brad Lander from Brooklyn, thank you very much. He's proposing a package of three bills to enable parents to deal with the hybrid schooling model, some in home, some in class, that Mayor de Blasio is proposing for the fall in New York City, enabling through more childcare facilities, more requirements for employers to provide accommodations to parents. And Bridget Schulte from New America and author of Overwhelmed, Work, Love, and Play When No One Has the Time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, we had this conversation on Wednesday morning. Well, on Thursday morning, New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio announced the makings of a plan to use places like libraries and community centers to provide childcare to 100,000 young kids, hopefully filling some of that childcare gap you just heard about and giving parents who want to get back to work, of course, the ability to do that. So after we heard the mayor's announcement, we asked Brad Lander what he thought of the mayor's plan after floating his own, and this is what he told us.
It was great to hear the mayor's announcement that City Hall is committing to rapidly scale up childcare and enrichment activities so that working families will have support on the days students aren't in the classroom. Finding the space and the staffing needed to serve 100,000 kids each day is a huge undertaking, but it's essential to supporting working parents and their kids. We still need to require that employers make accommodations for parents who won't be able to work full-time as a result of school availability. And of course, we still need to push for the funding from the federal government and the state government to pay for all of this, and also to help childcare centers manage the high cost of reopening safely for younger kids, which is critical for so many working families. But the mayor's announcement today is a really good first step to fill the gaps in the proposed staggered school schedule and to make sure that it does not further deepen the inequality divide in our city.
And listeners, we will continue this conversation tomorrow from the teacher's perspective when the president of the UFT, the Union for New York City Public School Teachers, Michael Mulgrew, joins us. So we continue this tomorrow. Brian Lehrer, A Daily Politics Podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.